I think it's a funny relationship. So there's like a little bit of a love and hate thing happening. When I use it, because of the way that it works and the way that I stick pretty close to the analog version, even though I'm on digital, I get a lot of chances to accidentally review my notes as I'm kind of trying to find things. And that process actually imprints a lot of the knowledge that I'm gathering further into part of who I am. So I literally feel like I actually get smarter when I use it.
Hello, PKMers. Welcome back to Personal Knowledge Management with Aiden Halfont, the podcast where I interview fellow PKMers and dive into the unique ways they use their PKM systems for work, creativity, and life. In this podcast, you will learn what a Zettelkasten is, how you can become more prolific and creative using it, and the biggest Zettelkasten beginner mistakes. This week, we have King, a content creator with over 5 years of experience on YouTube, who embarked on a transformative journey to revolutionize his content creation process, balancing the demands of a full-time job, a growing family of two boys and a wife, and a desire to fulfill his creative potential with various methods. He sought out strategies to streamline his content production. After experimenting, he stumbled upon the Zettelkasten system, delving deep into Nicholas Luhmann's original paper and distilling its complex principles into practical strategies. Now, after 300 hours plus of applying his principles, he's built the Obsidian Zettelkasten Starter Guide to help creators go beyond regurgitating content. King, it is wonderful to have you on the podcast. And the first thing I would love to hear is, what is your story?
Right. Thank you, Aiden, for having me. So I did actually think about this a little bit prior to, starting the call. And I think that my story really kind of, comes from a background of art. So I went to art school. I studied animation. I've been a video game artist for 15, maybe 20 years, maybe dating myself here a little bit. But, so drawing and animating is my thing. So writing was definitely something that was, very recent, in terms of development on my part. Prior to writing the starter guide, which is like an 8,000 word beast, and like writing on Twitter, pretty much every day, it was like grade 12 writing, like before that. So it's been a while since, I actually published much of what I actually had written. But the reason why I started writing was because, like you said, I have two boys now. So time is just like non-existent for me. And, I thought, 280 characters every day. Like, that's like the baseline, right? Like, if you can't do that, it's time to like give it up, you know?
You're a bigger problem.
So of course I didn't, let that deter me, and I went ahead and tried to write. And at the time I was already kind of quite into the second brain and thought that was something that I could explore more, in the writing medium. And from there, I guess now that I'm talking about it, I think if I was to pinpoint like one sort of event to kick off the story that I've been on, it's, from a negative comment, giving something. And, there's always like, even if you get like 100 positive comment, one negative comment always kind of, eats at you. And, so this particular one, I don't think that there was much point to the argument or, the discussion, as it was kind of just changing subject until I like kind of let the person win. but it was an interesting one though, because it did get me to think a lot. Because at the time, my understanding of Nicholas Luhmann's Zettelkasten was mostly based on, completely, entirely based on Sankei's, How to Take Smart Notes, version. And through that conversation, I realized there was actually, it seems that there are some differences. So that's when I went ahead and actually, you know, studied Nicholas Luhmann's essay on his Zettelkasten and also looked at the Zettelkasten that he has online. And from that experience, I learned that, you know, actually there's definitely differences between the understanding of Sankei's version versus Luhmann's. And I think a lot of what I've been doing is just trying to figure out how to kind of communicate Luhmann's version in a way that is easier to understand for people. It's not that Sankei's version was wrong, but I think the delivery of it, it confused me. Like my interpretation of what he said led me to a different understanding of what Luhmann's Zettelkasten was. So I'm just trying to kind of add to this conversation and make it a little bit clearer. Yeah.
It's amazing how one negative comment can such a more emphasis than 100 positive ones.
Right.
I really resonate with what you said about Sankei Aaron's book, because as much as I love it, it was my entrance to the Zettelkasten, it definitely is a little confusing at points. And I'm curious, based off of your own journey of trying to understand it better, how would you explain the Zettelkasten as if I were a 5-year-old?
Right. Yeah, I think the reason why it's so misunderstood, well, first of all, is because there's so many different versions of it. To say Nicholas Luhmann's is like the one is probably not fair at all. And so many different versions of it do different things. But the problem with Zettelkasten is that I don't think you can explain it to a 5-year-old. the mechanics of it is actually quite simple. But the nuances of them, like of each part, is actually, there's so many things that could happen that I think it's really difficult to explain. But if I was to try to explain it as simple as I can, I think it really comes down to, I think I would say there's like 3 levels of organization in the Zettelkasten. The first level is what I call combo. It's basically kind of representing how Luhmann would, you know, put every note, add every new note into his existing notes by putting them close together, because they're cards. So by proximity, if they're close together, then that means that they're related. So there is that first version of it. And if you can imagine it, you know, if every new note goes into just a pile of notes, how do you know where to find these notes again? And that's where the index comes in. So that's kind of the second level. It's mapping out where various conversations happen. And I say conversations because adding a note that's most related to another note is very much like Twitter. You're commenting and you're replying to someone else's tweet. And if you could step back from, you know, all the tweets that you have contributed to, then maybe someone else has commented on your comment. That's kind of how I actually see the Zettelkasten. It's just a giant tree of conversations, people responding to one another, except this one is, you know, whatever resonated with you, like an idea or whatever. And then the third level is actually trying to map out in a logical way how you understand all these notes. It's kind of very similar to the approach of linking your thinking using map of content. That's also another sort of often misunderstood aspect of the Zettelkasten is people tend to think that it's actually all bottoms up, but it's actually not true. You actually kind of need all 3 levels for it to actually function properly. So that does not make a 5-year-old understand anything. But if I could distill it down to 1 sentence though, I would probably throw all of that out and say that if you want to have a system that systematically cross-pollinate ideas, this is a system that you could do that with. But there are some nuances in to actually understanding how that can. Yeah.
I think a five-year-old would have a pretty decent grasp based off of that. That was a difficult endeavor. So thank you for
trying.
Yeah. I liked one thing in particular you said, which is a big misconception about the Zettelkasten is it's all bottom up. But in order to function well, you need to have bottom up, middle out, and top down structure.
Exactly. Yeah.
Very much similar to the LYT framework, as you said, mm-hmm. by Nick Milo with his idea emergence.
Yeah.
I'm curious to hear what got you into the Zettelkasten in the first place. Like, what problems were you experiencing before that brought you to it?
Right. So, yeah, I think I first really kind of got into the whole personal knowledge management area through an Ali Abdaal video where he was kind of explaining second brain. I think a lot of people have a similar story.
Yep.
I'm very thankful for that, because as soon as I kind of heard, and second brain by far is just the best market name like that you can think, like,
my for God.
This whole thing. You know, who doesn't want a second brain? Who doesn't want like a superpowered brain? Like, it's just genius on Tiago's part. I got into it and I had loved the idea of, you know, focusing your efforts on sorting out, you know, what are the outputs, that you want, and then sort of reverse engineering back to how you can create a system to actually, you know, get what you want in the end. But what I found with the system, and maybe this is because I hadn't taken this course. But for me, I just, you know, just been reading, you know, what he's posting on Twitter and, you know, the blog posts that he has. And I struggled with actually implementing it. Because I didn't quite get, I think, enough tangible examples of how it could work. I think it made sense for like one particular project. Oh, like, you know, funnel all the related things into one project. But then after a project, all those notes become too overwhelming to like reorganize, and I don't know where to put them. If I don't have a existing project that I can move it to, it just felt like, I was spinning my wheels a little bit there. And I think during that time, I've kind of, you know, revamped my second brain over and over again. But it's still, I'm thinking that I could maybe come up with like, you know, some sort of Notion database setup that I could, you know, filter things out properly or like tag things properly. But I just never found it. And when I came across, Sonke's book, that kind of gave me another avenue to kind of explore. And what I liked about it was that there are some rigid rules, or contrary to what I think lots of people like to think, because it's such a simple system. Like, if you take something out, it's essentially not the same system anymore, which might be fine. But I like the idea that actually there's a working system that I could actually just take and use. So
one thing you said there about having these projects, but having difficulty navigating the fact that you can't like easily link them together, right, if it's in Notion, really resonated. I think that's one of the things that Obsidian gives with the linked nature,
right,
which it sounds like drew you to the app, the ability to like say, oh, this business insight is actually also a philosophy insight and also like this other thing. I think that's one of the beautiful things about the Zettelkasten.
Yeah.
How does building your Zettelkasten make you feel?
Right. I think it's a funny relationship. So there's like a little bit of a love and hate thing happening. when I use it, like because of the way that, it works, and the way that I stick pretty close to the analog version, even though I'm on digital, I get a lot of chances to, accidentally review, my notes as I'm kind of trying to find things. And, that process actually imprints a lot of the knowledge that I'm gathering further into, you know, part of who I am. So I literally feel like I actually get smarter when I use it. But the problem comes in where I kind of become full of myself and think that, you know, I am smart and I can do all these things, that I start to neglect it. Like I kind of go through these like cycles. I neglect it and I don't put as much into it. But then I realize that I don't have much more else to say until I use it again to kind of get the wheels spinning again. So it kind of makes me smart. And that's great. What it's not great is I forget that I needed to get to that point and not just, that I'm not okay by myself in some ways.
Oh man, yeah. That is so valid. Like I think with the Zettelkasten in particular, tell me if this resonates, but what happens to me at least is you'll go through a period of avid creation, like creating mocks, creating YouTube videos. You're just like, wow, these ideas are awesome. And then you'll get a little complacent. You'll start consuming more content. And then you get to this point where you feel so much just overwhelm from the amount of ideas that aren't organized in any way, that you hit what Nick Milo calls a mental squeeze point.
Right.
And that's when you create mocks or YouTube videos again. So it's like a very funny like ebb and flow.
Yeah. And then, and I say that kind of like a love and hate relationship, but I think that is just how things work. I think you just kind of go through seasons.
Yeah. What are the seasons you think you've gone through in your Zettelkasten?
I think right now, I mean, I can't really put names to it, but I think most recently, for me, I have, been more involved in, trying to build off of the Zettelkasten. I mean, I should clarify my view on it is that, you know, the Zettelkasten is mostly a way of organizing your notes so that you could come up with potential, interesting connections. And that's all it does. So in terms of using it for content creation, like creating videos or like writing online, that's like a whole different thing. So I think that for me right now, I've been in the season of actually creating a little bit less because I'm on a weekly basis kind of trying to test out, okay, I've got those, you know, this part of the Zettelkasten down, you know, generating ideas. That's a given now. Now I'm trying to see what is the most efficient way of like delivering those insights and those ideas, in the format or in a way that people can actually appreciate or people can actually understand. And that's where the season that I'm in, just trying to kind of extend it and adapt, the expression part of it, to what I think, would be good for, expressing myself as well as, helping others.
So you're really trying to dive deep into the way that it is you're using your system and how that you might be able to change it to help others use it.
Yeah, not so much change the Zettelkasten part, but just kind of building off of it.
I see.
Yeah. Because the Zettelkasten is kind of actually in some ways kind of a smaller scope compared to like, you know, Second Brain or Nick Milo's Linking Your Thinking. In my personal, it's just actually a smaller scope thing, but the, and that's the part that you probably shouldn't customize too much. But on top of it, if you want to create content, I think, you can use those frameworks from the Zettelkasten and build off that to create, sort of a scaffolding that can, you know, output and deliver, you know, insights that you might find in your Zettelkasten.
One of the things that I'm interested in diving into deeper off of that is, what do you think it is about the Zettelkasten that is different from some of the other most popular note-taking methods like Para and Idea Emergence and some of the things talked about by Bianca and Build Your Knowledge Portfolio and other people I don't know about?
I think the main difference, I think we touched a little bit on it, is that like the Zettelkasten part is actually quite niche in the sense that, you know, the main focus is to have a system where you're essentially comparing ideas all the time. You're trying to see, oh, you see something online on Twitter and it's, you know, through generalization, which is a big part of the system, you sort of take it out of its context and you put it in different contexts, and the system kind of facilitate that's this process. And you're just, oh, this particular idea is a great solution for A. So what can I do with this solution if it was put into another context? And then maybe there's a match there. It's actually quite, I think it makes me think of the Feynman technique, like the 12 favorite problems, where I think he basically talks about, you know, when you come across an idea that resonated with your particular solution to a problem, then you bring that solution back to your 12 favorite problems and you actually see, oh, does this actually work? And sometimes, something unexpected might happen and you find a new solution to a problem that you actually care about. So it's actually a constant sort of process of doing that. I think that's the biggest difference in the Zettelkasten compared to the other systems.
I think that's really insightful. Yeah. And another thing that I think would be helpful is with how niche the Zettelkasten is in the PKM community, I'm interested, how do you think the Zettelkasten connects to some of the more universal aspects of human life, like relationships, meaning, finances, like just living as a human being? Because I think it's easy to think PKM community is like all about nerds and note taking, but it's so much more than.
Right. I think for me, it's actually, I don't see it quite as an all encompassing thing. I think it's definitely a tool, that, you know, that someone could adopt, and, you know, be helpful in terms of, you know, making use of, your ideas and keeping track of them and making it easier to find things. I don't necessarily feel, it's definitely a tool in your sort of, on your belt there, to kind of go, and do what you need to do. Although in terms of like how it kind of, connects with the other parts of life, one of the things that I found was, helpful, I think maybe like a month or 2 months ago, I started doing this is, I started to do some journaling entries. And, using the framework from the Zettelkasten, just, you know, putting a new note or a new journal entry, close to the, another related, entry by theme or by topic or by whatever. It doesn't really matter. it's interesting because then you can, after the fact, realize what sort of things has been happening in your life repeatedly and what sort of things, what sort of, themes are kind of emerging. I think that that framework, works really well in, for something like journals, because journals, you tend to just write down and you kind of forget about it. But with the way that the Zettelkasten is organized, and if you apply it, you can find some interesting, connections that you probably wouldn't be able to find out otherwise. I think that, that's related in some ways.
Oh, 100%. And I agree that it, while it does have some awesome abilities for insight, it is at the end of the day a tool. And I do think the mindset and the methods you come towards living your life are more important than what specific tool you use, right? Like, you can use Analog, Obsidian, you can write on your wall if you want it. Oh, this is one I was really curious about. What are some of the most interesting connections you've made inside of your Zettelkasten?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I really should keep a list of these things, but I don't. But I think we kind of shared a couple of the ones that kind of were on top of mine, and it's kind of basically only the ones that I named and that I kind of remember, like combo, like the whole idea of like organizing by relevancy, and how that is very similar to how, you know, conversations on Twitter actually happens. You know, and you just reply to the most related one. I kind of really love that, connection, because, Lumen himself, called the Zettelkasten a conversation partner, where, you know, he would look up, ideas that, that comes up and see what his Zettelkasten gives back to him. So I left that connection there. And then I worked really hard on coming up with an acronym for it. So that's why I kind of remember it. So Convo, for those that are familiar, it's a, if I remember correctly, it's a conversational, organization of notes through the overview. Overview is a sort of a way to virtualize the Zettelkasten in Obsidian. So it's just a little bit specific to that. That is an interesting connection there, I think. I should really keep a list because I don't really have everything to share here.
I totally get it. You just keep a list on your wall of just coolest insights over the last week. Yeah. What are some of the biggest mistakes that you see people do when they start building a Zettelkasten?
Right. I think maybe I'm not sure if it's the biggest mistake, but there just tends to be I think especially with the digital Zettelkasten, they underestimate the faux shadow or faux gazettel. I don't know how they pronounce that word. And this is the thing that we've been talking about, is you know, organizing by relevancy, or I call it combo. I think there's a reliance on links, which you lose out on a lot of potential cross pollination that way. And it's actually the baseline organization in Lumen system. It's interesting how we feel like we could just ignore that part. So I think that's one.
Wait, so let me clarify that one. Do you mean people overemphasize links, or they underemphasize links?
Oh, that, I think overemphasizing links, actually. That you know, just with links, that's all you need. And actually, ignoring the, organizing by, relevancy part.
Okay, I get you.
Yeah. And yeah, I think also another one that that comes to mind is just thinking of it any of more than cross-pollination of ideas. Like, that's all it really does. And yeah, it's like people try to make it out to be sort of like a, you know, what the second brain represents, but it's really two different things.
So those, would you say, you think are like the two most common mistakes people might come to? Is that all cast in with?
I think so. I guess another one that comes to mind is maybe focusing too much on the Sankei's definitions of fleeting notes and permanent notes and literature notes, maybe.
Yeah. I think another one which I've seen is focusing too much on the atomic notes. I remember when I got into the Zettelkasten about 8 months ago, I heard about this concept of atomic note taking, which is where you create notes with only one idea inside.
Right.
When I first heard that, I was like, it's genius. I can link out to everything because the note only has one idea. But over time, I realized that I was sitting down one day doing a book summary of Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman. That book, first of all, has way too many good ideas. So partially the book to blame for being too interesting. But I was creating atomic notes out of literally everything inside of the book.
Oh, wow.
And it took me hours, like 10 plus hours to do it. And I realized that after the first 2 hours, you lose a lot of the leverage of creating atomic notes. There's a point at which it becomes procrastination. So I am now much more of a believer in the idea that you don't have to create atomic notes out of everything. And you can rather focus on creating what I call concept notes. It's just a brand name. Which means like notes that focus only on one idea. That means they can have many ideas, but they focus on one, and it allows them to be a lot bigger than atomic notes.
Right. Yeah. I think that's a good point. And I think it makes sense like, you know, learning about this, the idea of like, you know, atomic notes are like, oh, you know, how do you do notes on like index cards, you know, because you can only write so much on it. I think it makes sense for someone getting in to get too caught up on it. But I think like one thing to point out is also that Lumen himself didn't keep to writing on one card, per, like a note per card. Sometimes he writes across like six different cards. And some notes are actually not you know, an atomic idea. It's actually just links out to various arguments or something. It's like a table of contents for an essay that he's about to write. So there's all these different ways of doing it, and I think I think maybe it's from the desire to make the system more understandable. Like, we kind of you know, pare it down to like, oh, it's atomic notes, because that is definitely necessary for cross-pollination of ideas. But there's actually still, you know, other parts of it that could be missed if, you know, you only focus on that one part. So I totally agree. Yeah.
100%. And I think another thing which is important to note is the mistake of believing the Zettelkasten is right for you from the get-go, because it's not right for everyone. If you're in a very traditional school setting, sometimes the Zettelkasten can be very overwhelming because it's so different from how you normally take notes in school. Normally in school, you take notes for each class in a Google Drive document that doesn't connect to anything else.
Right.
So coming from that to Obsidian, where you link things together, can be very overwhelming if you come in with too much of the expectations that it's going to be similar to the school note-taking style you're used to.
Right. Yeah, it'd be interesting because if I was in school, I think that it probably doesn't make a lot of sense, actually, like personally speaking, to actually use the Zettelkasten, because mostly because I think the Zettelkasten is great for coming up with ideas and then pooling those ideas together to actually make something. And in school, I guess at least for me in art school, I didn't have to actually write essays or like write papers. So that wouldn't really make a lot of sense to me. I could see that it's definitely not necessarily right for everyone. Like even for my work, like I tried to use implement a Zettelkasten for my team of artists, kind of start taking notes together on like a kind of like a company wiki, on all the things that, you know, whether it's like technical things about a certain tool, like, you know, processes that we should follow in terms of how to create the art that we need to create for the games. I tried it and I quickly realized it does not work at all. it's not a collaborative tool. It's definitely like a personal tool.
No. So
yeah, I tried that, but it was a pretty obvious right away that didn't work.
Yeah. Zettelkasten, the worst group knowledge management system you could use. Yeah. I agree with you on some aspects that if you use Zettelkasten full-heartedly for school, it might not give you the grades that it might not be most effective for grades if you use it like it's meant to be used traditionally. Right. However, I do think there is tremendous value in applying some of the mindsets and methods to school from the Zettelkasten. Reason for that being, in my, I think it allows you to scale your knowledge base across semesters. Mm-hmm. And right. To give you like an example, like I remember my first semester at school, I was taking a few nutrition science classes, introduction nutrition science, learning all about all the things I should be doing to be healthy that I wasn't doing. And then the next semester, when I came back to school, I'd forgotten everything from the first semester. It just was gone. I never went back to those notes. I never looked at them again. I never used them for anything. However, I'm noticing that with the last two semesters where I was using the Zettelkasten, I feel like while obviously I don't remember the content as well as I will if I was doing it in the semester itself, like learning it right then, I feel like I understand and remember a lot more of the concepts than I would if I was still siloing my notes, because I do go back to those notes sometimes and connect them to new learnings that reinforces those connections that I'd made the first time.
Yeah.
And so I think if you, I will say I'm a little biased because I do have a course on Zettelkasten inspired note-taking system for school. Very much biased.
Right.
But I have found that the applying some of the mindsets and methods of the Zettelkasten and not sticking full-heartedly to the traditional system has been very beneficial for school.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I kind of forgotten one of the like great parts of the Zettelkasten is that it is long-term. Like it compounds over time, and whether I think the cross-pollination part is, even though I feel like that's maybe the sort of best thing about it. There are other good parts about it that can be leveraged for any other things too. So, you know, compounding knowledge over time definitely is very useful for someone going through college. I can imagine that.
Yeah. I feel like it also makes you fall in love with learning and in a, like you're very curious because you can add your own personality, your own jump between ideas in a way that resonates with you instead of necessarily following like a rigid set curriculum, if right. that makes sense. Did you have a thought on that?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think it really does have something to do with the fact that the process of using it is really, you're constantly connecting new knowledge to old knowledge, which makes you, you know, remember everything that you've learned more and more. And I think there's definitely dopamine hits as you do it. And so the more you enjoy the process of learning, you know, everything that you start to hear on a podcast, everything you start to read becomes an enjoyable experience of like, oh, how does this connect to what I already know? And you start to think a lot more about what you're consuming, I think. Yeah.
Hello, Aiden here. If you're enjoying the podcast so far, you should join my newsletter, Aiden's Infinite Play, with 500 plus other subscribers, receiving weekly actionable tips, helping college students level up their note-taking and studying inside Obsidian. It includes knowledge I've accumulated from over 1,000 plus hours of learning to take better notes, and from courses such as Building a Second Brain, Build Your Knowledge Portfolio, and the Linking Your Thinking Workshop. Have a great rest of the podcast, and if you want, you can sign up for the newsletter in the description below.
100%. Like, but beforehand, I remember the years where I would listen to podcasts and just never write anything afterward. I'd just be like, great. It's... I'm curious. You might not have an answer to this question. That's totally right. Okay. But has there ever been anything funny that's happened in the process of building your Zettelkasten? In?
Funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's definitely not something that I've thought about. Funny. What would be a funny story? I mean, I've been telling some friends about it, and I feel like they always kind of make fun of the names.
It's you're in some like cult.
Yeah, maybe there's a bit of that. I have no idea how it actually comes across. And I think another funny part that I could think of, actually, I was at a chiropractor yesterday and I was telling her, because we were talking about podcasts, and then so she had brought up, what was she talking about? But anyway, I was thinking about the program Snipped, app Snipped. And I was telling her about that. And then that conversation got into like, oh, I'm actually doing a podcast tomorrow. And it's about this personal knowledge management. But I feel like I have to preface it with like, oh yeah, so like, you know, I've been writing on Twitter for a little bit, and there's this thing called personal knowledge management. It's super geeky, but and then, you know, going into it, I feel like it's a funny thing to bring out. I feel like it's not something people like to talk about.
You know, that's such a good point. Like if you tell someone about canoeing or a hobby with ice climbing, right, it's not like you're ever gonna say, before I say this, I understand you don't get it. Yeah, right. Like personal knowledge manager, you're so right. Like sometimes you'll tell someone new and you'll just be like, please don't not be friends with me anymore after I tell you this. The reason I asked that question, that was hilarious, by the way, is I've had experiences in my Zettelkasten where I go into a note that I made like 8 months ago or something like that. Right. And my past self literally left like a note for my future self. And it's always something so stupid. It's like, right. I hope you liked the peanut butter that you got to eat today or something like that. Or I hope you have a, tell your dad you said hi. And I was like, it's so random, but you know, I think that's a funny thing about the Zettelkasten way of like going back to old notes is it's an interaction between your past and your present and future self in a way.
Yeah. So I have to ask you, because I've listened to a few episodes of yours, and this peanut butter thing always comes up, but I have no idea this. So I think you're going to have to explain yourself a little bit.
Yeah. So this is like basically the stupid inside joke of my brand on YouTube. I unironically just love peanut butter. Okay. Like and just unironic. And I think the reason is my mom and dad, when I was growing up, were very healthy. Like ingrained in me very healthy eating, exercise, and sleeping habits.
Right.
And one of the things that I noticed my mom in particular ate a lot of was peanut butter, like just insane amounts of peanut butter. But I remember we were sitting down one day, I was 16 at the dinner table, and I look over at her bowl while she's reading a book. And I just see like this avalanche of peanut butter. Cornel. And I'm like, we need to calculate how many calories this is. This is insane. So we looked, we weighed it, and we found out she was eating on average during that time, 1600 calories of peanut butter every day.
Oh, wow.
That's a lot of peanut butter. So that's the story of the peanut butter inside joke. I'm glad you noticed it, because that's really what I'm hoping to have happen is people over time, as they consume more content, also get in on it.
It kind of reminds me a little bit on Kafan Cheng's he's the building public guy.
I follow him. Yeah.
Right. So he's got the broccoli and his always think of him when I see broccoli, like at least a cartoon version of a broccoli.
Yeah. I'm curious for you, what are some niche interests of yours that are like the broccoli or the peanut butter of us?
Oh, wow. I haven't really thought too much of that. And sorry, a balloon just popped. We have a bunch of balloons at home. I don't know if hopefully that didn't blow out the audio. Well, niche hobbies, I guess, just really have a couple. One is, maybe there's more. I love basketball. I'm a pretty rabid NBA fan. I love movies. That's actually one of the things that I think tie into the Zettelkasten a little bit. I'm always constantly sort of associating various aspects of like different movies and connecting them together. Just like when I talk to people about it, it's like, oh yeah, this reminds me of that scene in that movie, or like that object in that movie where they blah 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 blah, and how it's connected. And I always loved connecting, you know, real life with fiction and how it can inspire like new ideas. I think that's always been a part of who I am. I don't know if there's anything in particular that I can think of that I could use as my peanut butter or broccoli. I should definitely a little bit. And I think that maybe another aspect of this is where maybe you and I connect, actually, is when I was listening to your podcast, you had mentioned some things about video games. And then I've been in video games for a long time. Like, well, I didn't really think of that until you mentioned it.
Yeah.
I'm not a game designer, but, you know, I'm familiar with a lot of the aspects of creating the game. And, you know, how important it is to create a core loop, and how important it is to, you know, create rewards for you, you know, for you to kind of repeat your actions over and over again. And that is a part that I think is something that I'm very interested in getting into more, is how exactly do you create a core loop with your PKM, in that you can create good addictions. Even though I work in games, I actually don't play too many games because I get so addicted whenever I actually get into it. So I try to keep away from it and just do it for my work. And that's about it. So I named a bunch of things and I can't really think of a symbol to represent any of them. So, but if there is anything, maybe it's something's there.
Yeah. That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. And you know what? After the podcast, I will send you my best resources on gamification because I think there's a whole rabbit hole there that is very connected to PKM. Like you said, I think the game really changes. And actually, let me emphasize that the game of PKM, I think it's really helpful when you think about it like a game, because in many ways it is. Like it has goals, it has rules associated with it. It's got a feedback loop, it's got a gameplay loop, and it's got hopefully voluntary participation. Hopefully. Yeah, that's awesome. I'm curious. This is going to take a little bit of a step into a different topic related to Zettelkasten, but have you explored at all into how you see AI affecting the Zettelkasten system?
Right. Yeah, I haven't, you know, spent too much time on it, but I definitely learn about things here and there. I was part of the Ship 30 program, and they've been pushing, Dickie Bush has been pushing that quite a bit recently. So I learned a few things here and there. And I think for me, at least from what I understand now, is that there's definitely, like for people, I kind of joke about this, but I think for people who's following the para framework and the second brain framework, is going to be immensely useful, because I think that the organization there is just not that helpful. And I think even Tiago himself says, you know, AI is great because now I don't have to do organization, because I think there isn't really a proper way to organize things where it's actually helpful for long term. But I think with AI, that can be really helpful in terms of wayfinding and contextual recommendations. I was playing around a little bit with it in terms of how it could facilitate the wayfinding in Zettelkasten, which is mostly through the index. So I was kind of playing around with like, okay, I have an idea. I'll write this note down. Then I feed the ChatGPT like my index of keywords essentially, and then say, you know, which ones are like the top most related keywords that is related to this new note, and then helping me find potential targets to actually go into my Zettelkasten and find different threads of notes through that way. I don't fully trust it, so that's another thing too. But I think more recently I've, because my Zettelkasten has grown quite a bit, I think the navigation system could really be helped by it with the AI. I think though, as the Zettelkasten grows, my perspective on like cross-pollinating ideas has to adjust as well. I can't just spend time, you know, trying to cross-pollinate like through all of these like keywords and different like, you know, rabbit holes it could go. So I think I had mentioned that the 12 favorite problems, I think that is, you know, something that could sort of focus the attention on the cross-pollination. It's not so much about cross-pollinating random ideas, it's about specifically in focused problems, then I think it'll be helpful and in terms of efficiency. So I think, yeah, AI could definitely be helpful in that way. And then also I think in terms of like thinking through a problem as well, like if you could feed ChatGPT some notes on a certain topic, and what's great about doing it in the style that I do it in Obsidian, like through Convo, is that every idea is very short. So you kind of get a lot of like different perspectives in the very short amount of words, and asking it questions and then asking it to expand on certain ideas through different ways. Like, what are the problems people are trying to solve here, based on this conversation? You know, what is the deep human desire that this is actually fulfilling? You know, just asking these questions and having it give back to me helps facilitate thinking. I think that's also very useful. And then thirdly, I think the final one is just helping you write. If you've already done all the thinking, then you already can map it out in a way that is easy to understand, as you know, just bullet points. Like getting it to write in your style is, I think we're probably pretty close to that already, if not already there.
Yeah. Okay, so it sounds like the three things you think AI can be useful for in the Zettelcast and probably BKM at large.
I think so, yeah.
Are organizing, thinking, and writing. And am I correct in those three?
I think so. I think maybe just to caveat it is that they don't replace all those things.
Yes.
They kind of enhance those aspects. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I love that last thing you said, because I had some thoughts I wanted to add for each of those. And the first one was, I read an article in Every recently that was essentially saying all the time we've spent organizing our PKM systems has been wasted because AI can do it all for us.
Uh-huh.
And I had a lot of problems with that article, because while AI can help us organize things in our system, like with tagging, talking about the type of something, the status of a note, I do think there is meaning in organization itself, in facilitating your understanding.
Yep.
It's entirely different to tell an AI to make your mock and you making it yourself.
Yeah.
So I thought that article just missed the mark completely.
Right.
As for the thinking, I very much think you should check out the work of my really good friend, John Maverick, who he's creating a YouTube series on how to use AI in Obsidian. And some of the prompts that he has put down for Zettelcast in particular are just phenomenal. I've been using them over the last few weeks and they were incredible. I was writing a book summary for The Inner Game of Tennis yesterday, and three prompts in particular just blew my mind. The first one was, summarize these highlights with my 12 favorite questions in mind. And it summarizes like where the highlights go under your 12 favorite questions. It's just, that was great. And then another one was like, create atomic notes or concept notes, rather, out of the highlights here using the linked base format of Obsidian, and like tell me which highlights go with which one. That was also insane. And then one last one was, summarize this to me, but explain it as if I was a 5-year-old in a few sentences. And also, in the terms of someone with a background in this, I put video games, and it's so good. Like it makes the most complicated stuff seem easy because they talk about it in video game language. It's great. Right.
Awesome.
And yeah. Yeah. And then for the writing, totally agree. I think the, once again, the writing's still like totally you for the final process. But I've found that ChatGPT has been very helpful in particular with the outlining stage. In the Zettelcast, and I love using this process called dump, lump, jump, which is where like when you're writing something, you dump all of your notes associated with the writing down, then you lump them together into themes, and then you take the content of the notes and paste them in. And where ChatGPT is really helpful is you put your lumpings into ChatGPT and you say, this is what the article is on. What holes might I be missing?
Right.
And that's fantastic as well. Yeah.
That's really kind of the power of those prompts in AI, I think, you know, and as a person, you know, you only have so much capacity to kind of like think through everything from different perspectives. And this one, you know, you just copy and paste and you kind of get a different perspective, which, you know, you can agree or disagree with, but it's definitely a conversation partner that's definitely contributing to that too.
Oh yeah. 100%. Yeah. I just cannot wait to see how AI keeps going with this out of class. Sure.
Yeah. I'll check out your Joe's John Maverick.
Yeah. Great guy. this one was a question I don't think is often talked about in the Zettelcast community, which is, what are some habits or routines that you think have helped you build your Zettelcast in?
Right. I think one thing that comes to mind with that is kind of using that GTD 2-minute rule thing. What I realize, or at least that it is for me, this is kind of a personal kind of feedback on the process, is I found that doing batch work with a Zettelcast in doesn't work for me. Meaning like if I have just a ton of notes to process, I just will give up. I will not do it. And what works for me is if my notes, you know, from a book or from an article are kind of distilled down to, you know, very, very minimal notes. Like I think this is also kind of influenced by Nicholas Luhmann's, like reading notes, where he just basically has like one card for each book and he has maybe like 20 lines on them for the whole book. It's essentially a kind of like an index of ideas, and just pointing back to different page numbers. So that has worked really well for me. And the reason why I set those 2 minutes is because, when it's like that, I review the notes from a book and then I say, okay, out of these like 20 notes, there's only like, there's 5 of them that jump out at me, and I could do, you know, turn them into permanent notes very quickly. And if I could do it in like one note per like, you know, 2 minutes, then I get it done and it's not going to, you know, be lost in the, you know, the backlog of books, notes that I never processed. Or like an idea comes up, instead of just, oh, you know, it's now in the inbox and I can process them later. I find it much easier to actually just go in there and process it if it's actually something that I resonate with. And I think also just adding one more thought to that, sorry, I'm just kind of maybe rambling a little bit, but
no.
I think the creativity part, I think to me, there is definitely some mysticism to it too. Like we've been talking about it as kind of the product of, you know, cross-pollinating ideas. But I think while I still haven't read the book, but I keep listening to podcasts from of Rick Rubin talking about the book. And I think he kind of, at least comes across as thinking that, you know, creativity is really just something that is kind of timeless. It's not from within, it's outside. And if an idea resonated with you and you just kept it in your inbox and don't process it, it just goes away. Like there's no point to that idea anymore. So if you have an idea that you really, resonate with, you should run with it and see where it takes you, because it might change the whole course of what you're planned to do. So I think there's that sort of spiritual kind of woo-woo side to it, that I think, is useful, I think, to think about.
Okay. So it sounds like some of the highest leverage habits you've gotten is don't batch process your notes because it's too overwhelming. And also really take advantage of the inspiring moments.
Yeah.
I really love that last one because inspiration is a luxury in the creative field. And I think those times where you do feel it, just diving into that, literally breaking routine has been some of the times I've created, in my opinion, the best things on the internet. And I'm curious to hear, for you, like, has there been an example of something that's really inspired you in the last month or two?
Is specifically about what though? Like, inspired. I think we touched a bunch of the things that we kind of talked about today, like the gaming. The creativity as something that's outside of you. I've always been like, I guess, interested in that idea. It's almost like, maybe this is actually an interesting story. are you familiar with the show called Manifest?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe I'll still tell it, who might be familiar with it. So it's a very cheesy show. But I like it, because it's the premise of it, inspires me. So Manifest is, referring to the manifest of a flight. And the show talks about flight 828, where it flew from, I don't know, somewhere in South America to back to New York or something. And on the way, it goes missing. And then 5 years later, it arrives again. But this time, 5 years later, for the passengers that were on board, they didn't realize anything happened. They thought it was still 5 years earlier. So they come down the plane and, you know, previous boyfriends are now with other people. Their friends are different, blah, 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 blah. So there's obviously some drama there. But the reason why I really enjoy the show is because since they get off the plane, they started getting these things they call the callings, which is basically like, you know, maybe signs that they would see, like maybe it's audible, maybe it's visual, or maybe it's just a feeling. And the whole premise is that they need to follow these callings in order for something good to happen, like often saving people's lives. So I feel like creativity in a lot of ways is kind of like that, like you kind of get inspired.
Yeah.
And then in like what we just mentioned, like if we follow it, we can see where it takes us. Like, cause you never know, what is on the other end of that, that journey. I think that's very inspiring and motivational. And, I really, like that show because of that. But it's pretty cheesy though.
I'm glad you shared that because that is so related to the idea of following what inspires you. And I think that's one of the things that really is when the Zettelkasten hits for you is when you have one of those moments of insight or inspiration. Now, this is going to be really fun because this next two questions are from past podcast that I had with someone named Dr. Oakley. She is the author of many books like Learning How to Learn, A Mind for Numbers, and a course online, Learning How to Learn. And there are two questions she had for you when I told you a little bit about her, a little bit about you. This is her wording. So if you want to reframe the question or go against it, it's up to you.
Wait, before I get into that. These are questions actually for me specifically.
Yes, for you.
Oh.
That she wants to ask you.
Okay.
She's the last podcast guest I had. This is a fun tradition we have.
Okay.
How can you be sure that what you are writing down and making hyperlinks for is actually getting into your brain?
I think that for me, the way that I see how things get into my brain through the Zettelkast anyway, the hyperlink doesn't do much. It's on its own. But if the reason why I'm making a hyperlink is because there was an inspiration that, oh, there is connection between one thing with another. And I should caveat that part with sort of my process. I don't make a lot of links in my Zettelkast from one note to another, unless they were actually really meaningful. Because I get a lot of links for free from using Convo. And I get a lot of links for free when I use the index. I should probably explain the Convo part just because notes end up being, or because notes are organized by relevancy. Therefore, if a note is close by, it is already linked, by proximity. So I don't do a lot of linking when it's on a topic that's related already, essentially. But I do linking specifically when there is something, there's a note that actually works in multiple contexts. And even then, actually, I started doing another way as well. Instead of linking it, I just have another instance of that note in another part of my Zettelkast. And I have like little markings on my on this overview note to tell me that, oh, this note actually appears elsewhere. And then I follow that. So that's kind of like my way of linking. So I kind of stay on the overview page so that I could kind of survey the conversations and how it kind of changes. So for me, back to the question though, how do I know that it's getting to my brain? Because I use the overview page where I can see all my notes at one glance, I end up just, you know, I like to say like accidental space repetition. Whenever I go into a topic, I'm constantly basically reviewing the things that I've noted down. I think it's through that that would actually imprint knowledge into my mind, I think. Simply by creating a link, whether it's those free links that I'm talking about or an actual hyperlink, that only just marks it. And unless I revisit it, it's not going to actually get into my brain, I think.
Okay. I love that point you made about linking mostly for things which are seemingly disparate, because if they're obviously related, what's the point?
Yeah.
I do think that one of the things she was getting onto, knowing her background, is if you think that a system like the Zettelkast in could help you memorize things to the same level as using flashcards or other studying techniques.
Right. It definitely wouldn't be. I think, I don't think that's the purpose of it. I think what's cool about it is that it does give you like a lesser degree as a side bonus of using it. Yeah.
I completely agree. I think like, something that was really insightful for me, this might be very obvious for you, I thought it was like, was the difference of when you use note-taking versus when to use flashcards. And for me, like largely note-taking is great for fostering understanding of something. if it's not yet chunked together, like you have a ton of disparate ideas, but you don't know how they connect into a whole, that's when note taking is awesome. But, and also if you want to write something, because it helps to have the written thoughts down so you don't have to start from scratch.
Yeah.
Whereas flashcards are great if you want to memorize already chunked information and you already understand it.
Right.
Because that, I think, is going to be much more effective for memorizing than the Zettelkasten system, right? Yep. And I, there's some very interesting talk about combining the Zettelkasten with flashcards. Like I myself do it as well. As like sometimes I'll take a note that I've made if I really want to memorize it. I don't do this for most notes, but if I'm like, I'll put it into iDo Recall, which is the flashcard software I use. So I completely agree.
And I think just to also add to that, I think you also mentioned in an episode recently about the method of Lucy or Lucy. And I think one of the thing that isn't discussed a lot is that I think with the Zettelkasten, especially when it's the analog version and you have, you know, drawers of them, or like just the simple fact that some cards are closer to the front and some cards are in the middle, and some you actually build a physical connection with like where do you sit, you find notes, and it's not that it's important to remember where some of the notes are, but it builds a visual framework, I think, in your mind about what do you know, what you do know. Like you know that, oh, there is a conversation in this part of it, and it allows you to do that. And that's why I really advocate for virtualizing the analog version of, you know, having all these cards as opposed to relying on links, because I think the Meta Volucci, like, it really does add to the experience of actually understanding the knowledge that you're acquiring.
Oh, I love that you added that. I completely agree. I think there is something beautiful about analog, which you don't get in a digital system. They both have positives and negatives, but even with books, like physical books, you'll read them and you'll remember something from them, and you'll actually like remember the spot of the book it was in. Whereas if you're taking digital notes with highlights, it's not like you're, oh, that's 3/4 of the way down the page of that note. Not the same. Her second question was, do you think that linked-based note-taking in Obsidian can really reveal holes in your research?
Not on its own, for sure. But I do think that one of the great things about organizing relevancy is that you kind of have potentially a bunch of you because organizing by relevancy means that you're sort of branching out certain topics. So as soon as you start branching out on a specific topic, you can start to think about that specific topic in terms of dissecting it further. And through that process, you can find holes in terms of like, oh, do you know, you know, we're talking about, you know, snipped. Like, what is that really about? Like, you know, what is the problem this is solving for people? And when it comes down to it, I think this is actually just answering the question of like, how do you quickly capture something? And why do you need to quickly capture something? It's because we want to create an informational funnel. It's so that we can turn what we, you know, consume into something that's useful. And then you can start to think about the different avenues of like, oh, you know, why is snipped important? You know, like what are some of the tools that are involved? What are some of the benefits that it brings? What are some of the pitfalls that it brings? So like once, as soon as you kind of have a topic and you kind of break it down this way, then you can certainly find holes, in, you know, your thinking that you haven't thought about. And I think that's what AI is great for. If you just have a prompt to kind of go through a bunch of these kind of questions, and then you can certainly find holes, I think.
I agree. I think like that's one of the best parts about AI is that like outsider's perspective. I think another really great way I've found the Zettelkast and also Idea Emergence from Nick Milo can help you find holes is with that more top-down thinking perspective. I don't think it's in the bottom-up thinking that you as much find like big. But yeah, when you create a mock or you, I've recently created a library note for the linking thinking workshop, which is like a note with all of your highest order mocks in it. And I realized, I have like zero notes on natural sciences and applied sciences because I'm a psychology major. So I was like, I should do something about that. So I think that's where it's really right. Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now you point too, like being that top, like through the top down method of like, you know, remapping what is it that is in your Zettelkast and is really helping in terms of goals. Yeah.
Yeah. Now you get to have the fun ability to choose what question we're going to ask the next podcast guest. The next podcast guest is Dimitri Panisi. He is the creator of the Rise Productive YouTube channel, which is a channel that helps distill productivity tools to the layman public to help them more effectively live, be efficient and effective, and therefore help others in a better way. And a big like tool that he uses for his second brain is Notion. So I'm interested, what question would you like me to ask him? Can be anything.
I'm familiar with him.
Oh, you are?
I've subscribed to his channel. I just had a look. Although now that I'm looking at his YouTube channel, I realize that I'm being fed mostly on his tool stuff. This is interesting. He doesn't have a Rise Productive is a new channel by him.
Yeah.
I see.
He's got two.
Right. All right. What questions? I'll just say whatever out loud, thinking out loud here. Cause he's quite, productive. Like he makes so much videos. So, I would love to know, what his process is in terms of, generating ideas for a video and then actually doing it. Like it'll be good to know, what his process is. Maybe the second, question would be,
Dr. Oakley just really wanted that second.
Okay. Well, I'll just finish what I was going to say anyways. I'm interested to know, why a second channel? It's more about money.
Yeah. Why a second channel? These are both fantastic questions. I'll be bringing them to him. All right. What are some easy, actionable steps anyone can take to this call to begin building their Zettelkast and if they're interested?
Right. I can't say that I was privileged enough to actually find anything that I think was super helpful for me. I think, how I shared with my story earlier that it was really studying like Nicholas Luhmann's, but I would not recommend that, unless you're willing to put the time to it. And that I think is kind of what I'm, looking to work on right now, starting to build some workshops that I like to kind of find a way to, help people build it by actually walking them through building it in an actionable way rather than too theoretical. So unfortunately, I don't have anything to recommend. If you want to know why you should go to why you should adopt a Zettelkasten, I think my starter guide does a good job for that. But in terms of actually putting it together, I think the videos that are on the starter guide is probably not quite enough, and that's kind of what I'm working on now. So I think that's all I can offer for now.
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, your starter guide, like, so great, I think, recommendation. What are, I have two wrapping up questions, and okay. Those are, what are three books that have resonated with you most?
Right. Yeah, there's a couple that comes to mind right away. One is The Boren Letters, which is a copywriting. And then the other one is The 4-Hour Work Week, sorry. And the reason I think why I really like those books is because they sort of, it's kind of like Casey Neistat, that you're kind of sharing ideas through everyday life. It's not like completely, you know, theoretical. It's not so deep into just ideas, but actually connecting it with, you know, who you are as a person. I think those things resonate with me. Yeah.
How do you spell the Boron letters?
Oh, it's a B-O-R-O-N.
Oh, I did it correctly. Awesome. I some of the best books I have are from podcast guest recommendations. So
right, the Boron Letter is really, really good.
Yeah, I read the 4-Hour Work Week. I'll check out the Boron Letters. Is there any questions I haven't asked you would have liked me to ask?
Can't think of any. I think we talked about quite a bit of different things. I don't really have anything in mind. Maybe this one.
Do you also like peanut butter? I'm kidding.
Peanut butter. I've actually had to convince my 3-year-old to eat it. He was too into Nutella and, not really into peanut butter and jam, but I think I sold him on it by, keep adding like peanut butter and jam into his Nutella. And then he just kind of started to enjoy that.
Genius and much more nutritious. Yeah.
One question I could think of is ask me about what game I'm working on right
now. What game are you working on right now?
It's only the most played game probably ever.
Minecraft?
No, everybody says that. It's probably actually true. That's Minecraft, but it's not Minecraft. It's a Solitaire.
That's a sleeper game right there. See, the thing is, like, no one, before you keep going, no one would guess that because if you are playing it, you're doing it alone. So it's like,
right. It's true. Yeah. It's still, I think the last I've heard it, it's still getting like, insane amount of like millions and millions of people playing monthly, so it's still going strong. Not sure what will happen in 10-20 years, but
so what was there anything in particular you wanted to talk about that? No,
I thought it was kind of a funny thing that I like to kind of share with other people because it's solitaire. But at the same time, it's a, you should check it out. If you have a PC, I mean, it's already installed, you know?
Yeah. I love that. Have you been playing any solitaire because of it?
No, I haven't really played. I mostly play, for work, for nowadays. And as I mentioned earlier, I get too addicted to games when I start playing. So I try not to.
Yeah.
I solely look at it from a information gathering practice. Yeah.
Totally get it. Where can people reach you outside of the podcast?
Right. At King in Motion on Twitter. I think that's the easiest way and where I'm most active at the moment. Yeah.
Great. Well, King, this has been phenomenal. I've had a great time.
If you enjoyed the podcast, you should consider checking out my and fellow Obsidian creator John Maverick's flagship note-taking course, Obsidian University, your secret weapon in school. In it, you'll learn how to find enjoyment in learning and studying by breaking out of the cookie-cutter mindset. You'll flesh out a systemized process for taking notes on class lectures and outside learnings to get straight A's. You'll create a unique personal knowledge base inside Obsidian that scales across classes and semesters. You'll set up your system upfront to require only 15 to 30 minutes of daily maintenance. You'll learn how to navigate the overwhelming level of information and overcome FOMO. You'll learn how to integrate AI into your note-taking, and you'll gain access to a community Discord with fellow students learning to make the same transformation. Join the new student era today by checking out the course in the description below or signing up for one of my free email courses related to the course on the landing page. I hope you had a fantastic time listening, and I will see you on the next podcast.